everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is John.
And this is Mike.
Mike, you know, just got a new baby. And yeah, I don't want to go over her name and all that and where exactly she came from. But my life has definitely hit a pretty good level. I mean, I'm happy now. The baby's keeping me busy. She's a sweetheart. But babies are hard and they're expensive. You eat and they poop and they sleep. And when they're not doing that, they're either happy or they're crying. If they're crying, they need to be burped. It's just, it's becoming, I don't know, it's taking up a lot of my time, but at the same time, it's not really stressing me out too bad.
It's an enjoyable time taker. Yeah, and she's adorable too. That helps a lot. Adorable babies, they offset the pressure of having to constantly be there and care for them, but she's adorable, man. I'm glad for you.
She's been a real fun thing for me and her mama. It's always been something that her mama's wanted. And we got her. Hopefully she'll be a permanent addition to our home soon. That being said, Mike, today you're over for a couple of reasons. You're over because we are going to fry some fish. We're doing the podcast, of course. And we're going to watch UFC tonight. And
we're going to make you play Heroes of the Storm.
Yep, I'm going to play Heroes of the Storm at my house. Michael's going to try it out here. We decided pretty much that we're going to kind of leave from the category. We're going to still follow the categories of Just Chill here. We want to talk about UFC, and UFC does not fall under any categories. I mean, the best I can do is movies or news, because it's a big event. Got two big fights going on tonight, and you know, we don't want to talk about an hour of video games every podcast. We want to talk about different stuff. So there are going to be some categories that we're not going to hit. We're also recording the podcast in a different way today. We have our headphones just standing up, talking into one headphone. It's kind of awkward, but we're going to make it work because you guys need to hear the best quality version.
And it lowers the work on our end. The amount of editing it took to get the first podcast out was incredible.
Yeah,
we had a horrible echo issue.
I clocked about 10 hours of solid editing on that first podcast. Thankfully, that didn't happen when I had the baby, because that podcast would have never been released.
Yeah, John did all the editing. I clocked about an hour of looking for ways to get rid of echoes. I don't know how he ended up doing it in the end, but he did a good job. You hear the occasional echo when you listen to the podcast.
A lot of selecting this small section, delete. This small section, delete. And over and over and over. I had to stop. I mean, there's times when you do these long post-production jobs, you gotta stop. You have to stop for a couple of hours because it gets extremely repetitive. Kind of makes me feel bad for people who work those repetitive manufacturing jobs where they're like processing chickens and stuff like that. Alright, well anyway, it's very repetitive. And lost my train of thought because we were interrupted there for a second.
We had a little bit of technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties are bad. What was I talking about that was repetitive, man? I'm having a senior moment.
Editing
the podcast. It's already drove me senile. Anyhow, Mike, tonight, Ultimate Fighting Championship. Weidman versus Machida. What do you think?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. Still, for my benefit, I'm waiting to see Chris Weidman really perform. I didn't think, leading up to his first title fight with Anderson Silva, I did not feel that he necessarily deserved it. He hadn't really beat the top guys that were between him and Silva. The biggest name he beat was Mark Munoz, and he beat a fat, out-of-shape Mark Munoz. So, and then the first Anderson Silva fight, kind of a fluke. Kind of Anderson's fault. Second one, Anderson kicked him and broke his own leg. So, we haven't really got to see Chris Weidman perform against the top-level guy to a definitive finish, multiple rounds. Really get to see what he's made of. And Lyoto Machida is the kind of guy who could probably take him into the deep waters and really test the kid out. Super elusive fighter, karate background. He maintains his distance really well to not get caught by shot. Black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu if it does go to the ground. It'll be a really, really interesting fight.
Well, in the first Silva fight with Weidman, when I watched it, Weidman earned it because Silva wasn't presenting himself as a champion. He was overconfident and he was acting like a dumbass. And he got knocked out for it. The second fight came around, I think Weidman was outscoring Silva on points. Before he broke his leg, I think Weidman was winning that fight.
Well, here's the thing. In the first fight, there was a takedown, and we saw that Silva's takedown defense is not the greatest. But he doesn't take a lot of damage on the ground. Weidman threw a bunch of shots, and Silva took very little damage on the ground. Silva has really great ability of rolling with punches. As the punch is coming in, it may touch him, but he rolls his head so well that he very rarely takes damage. I don't believe we've ever seen him cut in the UFC. So he didn't take much damage on the ground, and when the fight got back to the feet, Silva clearly outmatched him on the feet. And when Silva starts outmatching somebody on the feet, he goes into playing head games. He starts dancing around. He starts matrix move, dodging punches. And in that fight, he just played a little bit too much. And I think Weidman hit him with a punch, and I think Weidman thought he landed a solid shot. And Silva was kind of playing, showing, hey, it wasn't that great of a shot. He played too hard, and Weidman clipped him. Barraged in and caught him and clipped him. Second fight, kind of the same thing happened. But the entire time they were standing, throwing punches, Silva was out pointing Weidman. I've watched the fight many times. If that fight doesn't go to the ground, Silva's going to win. Question was if Weidman was able to hold him on the ground, could Silva submit him like he did Chael Sonnen? This was like a big Chael Sonnen, Anderson Silva, part three, basically. You got a guy who was going to come in and do basically the same thing. Could Silva submit him if Weidman held him down the whole time? Because Weidman's a wrestler. That's what he does. His biggest thing is takes people down and they can't get back up.
When I was looking at their statistics on a page, I think it was an official UFC thing. I could find it on my phone easy. Couldn't find it on my computer just now. Weidman has a 100% takedown defense. And I would say that that means nobody's ever taken him down.
In the UFC, yeah.
He has about a 12% lower accuracy on his strikes on Machida. They have some balanced stats. They're basically the same weight. They have the same reach. There's no size advantages going on here. I think Weidman is going to take this fight, Mike. What do you think?
I'm really not sure. As far as size goes, I'm really not sure what Weidman walks around at. I know Machida has previously always fought at a higher weight class, but he did so because he didn't want to fight Anderson, because their teammates and buddies didn't want to fight. So they may be about the same size. My big thing is if it stays standing, and Weidman deal with the fact that he will most likely not be able to hit Machida. Machida plays way outside. He's very good at being in his range, but out of your range. And it'll be interesting to see if Weidman can deal with that. But if Weidman goes yanking it to the ground, it's going to come down to, is his ground and pound better than Machida's jiu-jitsu?
I think it's going to come down to Weidman jerking his ass down to the floor, pounding him out. I think if Weidman does to Machida what he did to Silva in that last fight, you know, you say Silva's good at deflecting those punches with his face. I wonder if Machida's going to be that good.
Well, Machida's not on the ground, but Machida has very high takedown defense. Most people can't take him down. Most people get knocked out by Machida when they go for the takedown. Okay. He is an extremely good counter puncher.
So we're going to see that in play. Yeah. All right. What about this Ronda Rousey and the other girl?
Alexis Davis.
I'm going to go first on this and say Ronda Rousey is going to flip her over and break her arm.
Well, honestly, I feel that's most likely what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be an arm bar because Ronda really wants to show that she can do more than armbar people. Her last fight, she took a girl out with a liver shot. There was no submissions involved. I kind of feel it's an uneven match, but the one thing you can never sleep on the fact that Alexis Davis is a long-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, and when it hits the ground, if Ronda does go for the armbar, she is going to be in the realm of a black belt in Jiu-Jitsu, and she could get caught just as easily
as her
catching Alexis.
I think in this case, though, strength. Ronda Rousey looks like she has a lot more strength than this girl, and when you get that girl in an armbar, I don't think she's going to be able to do anything versus that armbar.
I agree. The thing is we saw Miesha Tate elude the armbar multiple times in their second fight. She did a really good job of eluding getting put in the armbar. And Misha's not anywhere near the level of a jiu-jitsu practitioner as Alexis Davis. I think that's going to give her more of a chance. However, my thing is when you look at the work ethic of the female fighters that we've seen so far in the UFC, Ronda Rousey is an Olympic athlete. She has a work ethic above and beyond these other girls from what I've seen. She trains at an immensely high level. And she trains, I mean, all the girls train with guys because you almost have to. But Rousey almost trains exclusively with men.
She is a big old strong girl. I'm thinking that Ronda Rousey's going to win. I mean, she has momentum. I just think she's going to dominate. And what do you think, first or second round?
Most likely probably first round or early second round. I honestly think the only reason why her second fight with Miesha Tate went as long as it did was she said she wanted to punish Miesha and she wanted to it not to be a fast fight. And that kind of seemed to be the way. I mean, she went for arm bars, but she didn't seem to really be committing to them. She was enjoying beating up on her. Everybody else has been first round.
She handled Miesha Tate. That was a brutal fight. I don't think we'll see Miesha Tate versus Ronda Rousey again.
Or at least not anytime soon.
That's really the only fights I know about, Mike.
I don't remember the undercard fully, but I do remember seeing that it was... Looks like it's going to be a pretty good card all the way around.
Here's the stats I was trying to find.
Yeah, I mean, we got Stefan Struve and Matt Mitrione. That's going to be a good heavyweight fight. Mitrione's a good stand-there-and-slug-it-out fighter, and Stefan Struve likes to do the same thing. That's going to be a good punch-punch fight. You enjoy a good knockout, you're probably going to see a good knockout there. Uriah Hall fighting Thiago Santos. But Uriah Hall is a very exciting fighter.
Yeah, I hear about Uriah Hall on the Rogan podcast every once in a while.
Yeah, he made a big showing on the Ultimate Fighter. He had, like, one of the craziest knockouts. He did a spin kick on a guy, and the pop that sound that it made was just sickening. He messed up that dude's sense of smell. Like, it affected his sense of smell. He kicked him so hard. He's the kind of guy that you look at him, and with the proper training, he's the next Anderson Silva-style fighter. He emulates him a lot.
What about Burmage and Dome?
These two fighters I am not super familiar with.
Looks like Burmage is a little bit bigger than Dome.
A little bit bigger frame, yeah. Not super familiar with that one. But the final fight on the preliminaries should be really interesting. Uriah Faber versus Alex Caceres. Caceres is coming off of the Ultimate Fighter. He's shown really well in the UFC so far. They call him Bruce Leroy. I don't know if he'll come to the cage in it, but on the Ultimate Fighter, he came out in the yellow jumpsuit like Bruce Lee. Did a lot of imitating of the, What's that movie, John? What's the movie that Bruce Leroy's in?
Well, I don't know.
Barry Gordy's Last Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
He's imitating Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon.
Oh, okay.
But he's an interesting fighter. Real motivated, always got a smile on his face. Uriah Faber is the scrappy veteran. He's been around a long time. He's been the champion.
Looks like he's been around a long time. 37 fights as opposed to Leroy's 15 fights.
Well, and Caceres is, he's a pretty young guy. He hasn't been in there as long. Uriah Faber's been around for years and years. He was WEC champion for a while. Real tough kid. He fought a guy named Matt Brown in WEC. Fighting for the title, broke both his hands in the first round and fought five rounds.
So
broken hands.
See, age and experience versus a little bit more youth and a little bit more agility.
Maybe agility. I wouldn't say speed though, because Faber's a quick, scrappy little guy.
Right, and these stats that I wanted to talk about right quick: Weidman and Machida. Machida's had a lot more fights than Weidman, but submissions, 27%. Weidman's wins are submissions, and 27% went to decisions. But that means what? Almost 50%. He's knocked out.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked at this stat page. It'd probably been better to have the Wikipedia up on that.
Weidman has an inch on Machida, which isn't much. They both weigh the same right now for this fight, or well, when they weigh in.
Well, yeah, it's a title fight. They have to both make the weight. The thing is, here it shows Machida's only got 10% subs. The thing is Machida's this excellent counter striker, and yeah, he has a lot of decision fights, but he comes out unscathed. And the other guy tends to be beat up pretty bad. He doesn't have. I would say that Weidman probably has the power advantage and the power punch, but Machida catches you off guard and he levels guys.
According to these stats, Weidman has landed more punches per minute. He has missed more punches than Machida. So he's definitely burning himself out on his strikes.
Well, Machida's more of a technical striker, and like the amount of punches thrown, well, Machida's setting back. He has a style, a karate style, where he's leaning back and he's waiting for the other guy to throw the punch. When that guy throws a punch, he dials in with a counter, catches him pretty good.
Based on how many punches they've absorbed per minute, Weidman is taking a little bit more punishment than Machida. On defense, I don't know how they do their defense, but Weidman has a little bit higher of a defense than Machida. I have no idea how they do their defense.
Well, I would assume that that's avoiding strikes. But one thing you have to consider there on Weidman's case is, in most fights, he's taking the guy down. So he's not having to avoid standing strikes as often.
Takedown average, Weidman has 4 takedowns on average, and Machida has 1.54, which goes towards his striking preference. They have about the same takedown accuracy. Well, actually, Weidman has 3% on him. Yeah. Weidman has never been taken down.
Well, and that's the one thing, is like that stat looks like it's big in his favor, but the issue here is people want to try to take Machida down. He has an 80% takedown defense. That's extremely high for somebody you're trying to take down.
Yeah.
Whereas Chris Weidman, people aren't trying to take Weidman down. They want to stand and box Weidman because his boxing, it looks pretty good, but it's not to the level of most strikers.
And Weidman is going to do, he's got a high, like you said, he's a striker, he's not going to submit much.
Exactly, but he is a jiu-jitsu black belt, and he can throw in a submission from anywhere.
See, in the Ronda Rousey and Alexis Davis stats, Alexis Davis has a lot more fights than Ronda Rousey. Looks like almost more than twice the fights that Ronda's had.
Yeah, well, Ronda's, she got into the sport not that long ago. It's only been, I think, maybe four years that Ronda got into the fight game. But she came in coming off being an Olympic medalist in judo. And then she got into the fight game and she's been untouched. She's taken out everybody. She's fought everybody in the first round with the exception of the second Misha Tate fight.
Ronda Rousey has never taken a fight to decision. Half of Davis's fights have been in decision. Davis is shorter than Rousey. They're both 135 pounds. She is Ronda Rousey's definitely going up against a striker. But this is my problem with these statistics. Lacey Davis has fought, and she might be like Ronda Rousey. She may be the big bully on the block, but she hasn't fought somebody like Ronda Rousey. So is her statistics, more punches per minute, her punches absorbed. I mean, she might absorb 4.22 punches in a fight, but has she ever absorbed Ronda Rousey punches?
Well, maybe not, but at the same time, I don't think that Ronda Rousey's punches, not that they're weak, but they're not as defined, because she hasn't been striking near as long as, say, Alexis has. And Alexis is more known for jiu-jitsu than she is striking. But you'll notice a lot of women fight, even though they are a ground specialist, they're more apt to stand and throw punches. They're less likely to get knocked out.
Are we going to see Ronda judo toss this chick?
I would imagine so. Alexis doesn't have the heavy wrestling background. That's the background that's going to have the most effectiveness in countering getting thrown. You saw with Sarah McMahon, you didn't see Ronda toss Sarah McMahon because Sarah keeps her center of gravity low enough that judo throw, Ronda's not getting underneath her to throw her over her hip. Alexis is going to be very susceptible to that.
And looking at this takedown average, Ronda Rousey's takedown average is 7.73 takedowns, whereas Davis's is 0.86. That is crazy.
Well, Ronda, in Ronda's first seven fights, I believe that's right, first six fights, that's all she was doing. She was taking people down, going for the armbar immediately. I mean, that was what she was doing. Once she got the Strikeforce title, people started wondering, could she do more than that? And now you've seen her start striking more and taking down and not necessarily going straight for an armbar.
How do you feel about that? Do you want to see her take people out more? Since I'm a pro wrestler fan and I'm used to seeing the same dudes do the same crap 100 times a year, I prefer to see Ronda Rousey take them out with an armbar, because if that's what she does to win and she ain't getting her brains mushed in by punches, that's what she should do.
Well, she's starting to heavily get into jiu-jitsu, so I imagine we're going to see her do more submissions than just the armbar. My thing is, I want to see her finish people. I want to see all fights end before the final bell. I hate the fights going to decision, especially here lately. It's always real scary to let things go to the judges with the judging system that they have. So I don't care if she armbars every single fight for the rest of her career, as long as she's finishing the fight. That's what I want
to
see.
Yeah, I prefer to see her do the hurt arm bars. Just look, they remind me back when we watched WCW. Craig the Pit Bull Pittman wrestled three whole matches, put him in an arm bar, code red.
Yeah,
it's such a brutal move. But Mike, do you think this will be a good UFC pay-per-view night tonight?
I feel it's going to be pretty good. I mean, there's only one fight on the main card who I'm not familiar with, and even that one will probably be pretty good. It made it to the main card for a reason. It made it there above the Uriah Faber fight, and Faber is a scrappy veteran. So I imagine the main card is going to be excellent. The undercard, typically, undercards are always pretty good. Those guys are trying to make a name for themselves on that undercard. So
yeah, well, maybe they'll light it up, make it interesting. Then, you know, if it's a crappy pay-per-view, blow up fireworks after it's done.
Yep.
I have a lot of those. Last weekend we went and saw Transformers 4, and we only said a little bit about it. I didn't write a review for the webpage for it just yet. I hadn't rolled a movie thing. On that Transformers 4, I kind of let it digest a little bit more, and I thought about it. And you know what? I may have to give it a little bit higher score, because it really came out to be a little bit better movie than I thought at the previous time. I think I was freshly disappointed with the lack of the Autobots versus Decepticons war, but I'm happy that it ends with, you know, Metatron. Oh, spoiler alert, Metatron pretty much saying, we're going to have another movie. Because even if it wasn't a great movie, you got to admit, a Transformers movie, it could suck, but it's still going to be a pretty good movie to watch.
Yeah, and it's Megatron, by the way, not Metatron.
Oh, Megatron, whatever. Did I say Metatron?
Yeah, you did. Look, here, my thing is first I had to look at the movie by who the leading role is. And to me, Mark Wahlberg does a way better job than Shia LaBeouf does.
Oh, you're just biased.
Now, well, maybe. But I thought he did a better job. The big thing, my big complaint was there were a lot of corny lines between him and his daughter and him and his buddy. And it was like those corny lines were filler to keep the movie rolling along.
And that was part of that 20-30 minutes that they could have took out, and it would have been a lot better movie. And my problem with Mark Wahlberg is Mark Wahlberg does good with more serious events. When he starts doing lighthearted stuff, he just falls apart. He can't do it. He's just a serious actor. Like Lone Survivor, Mark Wahlberg murdered that role. Anytime he's in a dark, gritty, violent action movie, he does better. If he's doing like a drama, he does better.
Yeah, I like him in those roles too. I liked him in this one. However, When he's in a more serious role, he doesn't have that playful attitude about him. Well, like Mark Wahlberg in The Departed. That was an excellent role for him. But I do like him when he does more of like the silly side of himself. He did Ted. I enjoyed Ted. I enjoyed how he acted in Ted. And the Mark Wahlberg in Transformers, it's kind of similar to that. He's kind of got that goofy side to him. But he's being serious about his family. But he's being serious about what his job is.
Every time I see Mark Wahlberg in Transformers, even Ted. I didn't really like Mark Wahlberg in Ted. I like Ted in Ted. I think of Mark Wahlberg in The Happening. I automatically go to his M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong movie.
And this is one that we're going to disagree on. I thought he did fine. The issue with that movie was the writing and how they played the movie out. Good idea, badly executed. But I thought Mark Wahlberg was fine.
I just thought it was cheesy. Thought it was a cheese ball.
But that was the lines, though. To me, like, the new Spider-Man reboot, the first movie of the new Spider-Man reboot, those two actors did great. But the lines were terrible.
I love the new
Spider-Man. They did as best they could with what they were given, and I think that was what Mark Wahlberg did in The Happening.
But back to Transformers, I was really excited to see that the Dinobots finally got their chance to shine. Kind of different than what I remember from when I was a kid. But then all the Transformers are different from the cartoons. What I want to see next film, I want to see Autobots with the Dinobots take on the Decepticons and the Insectoids. I can't remember what the bug robots were, but they had the big contention in the Transformer universe that I remember as a wee little six-year-old kid, because I watched Transformers at my Aunt Brenda's house getting babysat. There was a big conflict between Dinobots and these insect guys.
Yeah.
They already had the construction Decepticons tag teaming with the Autobots. And they didn't really emphasize on them, but I want to see those insect Transformers fight the Dinobots in that Autobot Decepticon war. And I'm hoping to see that next movie.
Maybe, but then again, they may continue this storyline with Optimus and where he was going at the end of the movie.
Well, you know, Optimus Prime is leaving. You know, he's not. He may not even be in the second movie in that. The next movie, that may be a mistake. He's going to be in it. But if they had the Dinobots in the second movie and Optimus Prime found his Dinobots, well, maybe Megatron will find those insect Transformers and we'll see some good shit.
Yeah. And well, one thing. Now we're dealing with a different Megatron. I mean, this is not the Megatron that was in the first few movies.
Right.
This is Megatron reincarnated into a new type of Transformer. So it'll be interesting to see how he has his Decepticons. Will they be like him, or is he going to find some more? Or it could be that all he has is an insectoid army.
Maybe he stole some technology from the company that was making the new Transformers, and he'll make his own. Who knows? He's Megatron. He's very resourceful. He's the most resourceful bad guy in any movie series.
Yeah. Well, now let's talk about the two bad guys in the movie. We talked a little bit about Kelsey Grammer last week. Did an excellent job as a bad guy. Mm-hmm. Do we have the other guy's name? He was the leader of the company that was making the Transformers.
Yeah, but he started as a bad guy, but he meant well with his role as the creator of the new robots. Yeah, he was making money, but eventually he kind of turned over at the end.
That's true, but he did seem pretty snobby and cutthroaty at the beginning. He is the one that had the turnaround. I like that guy. I've seen him in other movies, and I thought he did a pretty good job at the beginning, acting like that cutthroat business guy. However, Kelsey Grammer stole the show as far as bad guys go.
Stanley Tucci.
Okay, yeah, Stanley Tucci. I could not think of his name, but yeah. I thought he did a great job. He did a good turnaround job.
He did all right. I thought he did pretty good. He was very lively. He was one of the more welcome human characters. I thought he did a better job than Wahlberg and the other ones. He did drop the F-bomb, which surprised me. There was a lot of asses, dams, and stuff in this movie. I don't remember cussing that much in the previous Transformers. No big deal to me. Man, my Facebook page lit up with people complaining about the adult language that was in this movie now. And I said, whatever, you gotta find something to bitch about all the time.
Well, I think we're getting to the age where that's no longer adult language. That's teenagers talk like that now. Yeah, I mean, yeah, younger kids than teenagers, it may be still a little risque, but the problem is, kids hear it. It's your job as a parent to teach kids not to say it.
Go watch the film White Men Can't Jump. Listen to Woody and Wesley Snipes talk to each other. And that's how kids talk these days. Pretty much.
More or less, yeah.
Oh,
and even though it wasn't like hard pushed performance, John Goodman did an excellent job as a Transformer.
He did voice. There were some times where his voiceover felt a little forced. Like, his voiceover, the way they put it into the sound effects, it just sounded really weird. Like, while he was blowing stuff up, when he talked, it sounded like it was a monologue more than basic dialogue.
Yeah, it didn't sound like he was in the heat of battle. But, yeah. But boy, it fit the character really well. And the character even looks like him. So, it works.
Last week, you mentioned talking about a book, Teens. Tell us about it.
Well, I think I got turned on to the series through NPR, I believe. The title of the first book of the series is called The Alchemist. And I believe the series is called Secrets of Nicholas Flamel. It's an interesting series. Basically, it's almost like a Harry Potter-style book. A little more adult-oriented than the Harry Potter books. It kind of starts out, got these two kids. One of them works for this guy who owns a bookstore, and the other one works at a coffee shop. And all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. Some guy shows up, creates a clay golem monster, and sends it in and wrecks the bookstore. And in the midst of all this, the kids find out that the guy that owns the bookstore is the immortal Nicholas Flamel. And he tells the kids that he can see that they have a special aura about them, and that they are the twins of legends, and that kicks the books off. And so far, I think I've read the first four books of the series. They're doing a lot of character building. The kids are having their powers awakened, then they're learning how to use their powers, and it's basically a straight-up good versus evil book. It deals with gods of our folklore. It deals with alternate dimensions. It's so far, it's really interesting. It's really good. It's on that teenage reading level, though, so an adult might not get fascinated and locked into it unless they really like fantasy stories, which I love fantasy stories. That's the reason why I've enjoyed reading it so far.
Right.
But it definitely isn't going to challenge you on a reading level. However, the story is really good.
So it'd be a good series to read quickly.
Oh, yeah, and the books aren't, so far the books aren't that long. Each book is not, they're not 400 or 500 page books. I believe they're about 300-something each.
Well, that's pretty cool. I am still reading Night Shift, Stephen King's first anthology of short stories. I haven't really read it much because, baby. But other than that, I mean, I have no interest in picking up any books right now. I might want to check this, The Alchemist, The Secrets of the Immortal Nicholas Flamel. There's 6 books in the series, but I want to read The Maze Runner first if I read any other books. And like I said, I'd like to read Game of Thrones. I said this last week. But not until George R. R. Martin finished wait 10 years for the next book. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I may also get you that Sheriff of Yordamere book. I think you'd enjoy that, and that's a very short book. You could blow through that.
That book had a very strange-looking cover.
It does. It's odd.
It's green. It's I don't know. It has shapes on it. It's really weird. Mike, I'd like to thank you for bringing the beverages. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Or Mike's harder blood orange. Tastes pretty good. If you like to drink, tastes pretty orangey. I got a little bit of a buzz. I drink one can, but you know, I'm a light drinker.
Yeah. I like it. It's a new one. It's the Mike's harder version of it, so it's got a little bit higher alcohol content than what you get in the bottles. So it's a little bit stronger alcoholy flavor. Problem is, I can't find it in bottles unless you buy that case that we saw the other day that had bottles in it, but I couldn't find it.
It's all right in cans, dude. Yeah. So, Mike, I rolled a 7 for my webpage last week. Or was it a 7? I don't know. Whatever number coincides with music. And I got tired of doing regular album reviews. And I took on this long project of going over the meaning of each song from System of a Down's first album. And, boy, looking back at that time, 1998, that song came out when we were listening to that music nonstop. Looking at those songs, they're really fun to listen to. They're really fast-paced. They're action-packed. There's a couple of slow songs, but mostly it's loud and it's violent. When you read the lyrics, a lot of it doesn't make sense. I don't know if you've ever read the lyrics to System of a Down songs, but if you read the lyrics and you read the album books and the information that they write in the bylines and their bios and stuff like that, you'll see that they're extremely political. You can watch their videos and see that they're kind of political, but if you start reading the lyrics and reading into the song meanings, they're extremely political.
Well, I would say that on their first album, it's been a while since I've listened to it. I wouldn't say that just listening to it, that the political stuff comes through.
It doesn't.
But in their later albums, you kind of hear that more, so I'm not surprised that there was some of that in the first.
Album. Well, the first album, it was a lot more subliminal. Mm-hmm. The second, Toxicity and On, anytime they had a song that was about politics, it was pretty much hitting you over the head with it.
Yeah.
The first album was very subliminal with the political speak, and researching each song and what people think, I ultimately found out a couple of things. I learned a couple of things. When you're writing an article like this, it's going to be thousands of words long. It's almost like a small book. It's a really long project. I'm halfway through, and I'm at 3,500 words, I think. I'm still not done, and I'm trying to find time to work on it, and I hope to have it done for Monday. And another thing is that I'm having a Mitt Romney moment. I had two things picked out, and now I can't remember the second thing. Now that I'm Mitt Romney, I talk bad about you all the time in the past, man, but I know how you feel now. I completely forgot what I was going to say.
That wasn't Mitt Romney. That was, what's his name, from Texas.
Oh, no. See, I had another Mitt Romney moment. Rick Perry.
That's I had a Rick Perry moment.
I'm not apologizing to Rick Perry. Anyway, it's a really long article. I learned that it's really long, and I guess I really learned that... Oh, yeah, here's my second thing. Unlike Rick Perry, I can remember what it was talking about. If I think about it.
Well, you wrote this. Unlike what he was saying.
Well, anyway, I learned that through all the reading I did, the members of System of a Down say that their songs don't have one particular meaning. They want their songs' meanings to be determined by the listener. So you could say this song is about this and this, and they may think, you know, they have their own ideas of what the song means, and I'm pretty sure all the listeners take it as fact. Like, they do have a song about one of their friends committing suicide. Serge Tankian said that in an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. But ultimately, they say we don't give our songs meanings. We don't talk about what our songs mean because we want you to figure it out. And that actually makes it a lot more fun to write because you're not chasing down facts. You're just chasing down logic. You're chasing down a way to start. This song means this. And you just want what you're writing to end reflecting that. And it's really difficult, but it's fun. And you start seeing things differently when you do it. Anyway, they had a lot of governmental spying on us. Corporations taking over. They had a lot of anti-war stuff, of course. So the big thing was is the song Spiders is kind of like NSA type stuff.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because that was in 1998. And now we're seeing the things he sang about on Spiders, nah. And I just wanted to go ahead and just say that. The article, it will be ready Monday, and I want everyone to read it because it's one of my better projects that I did for the site.
Is it going up Monday, or is it scheduled to go up later?
I think it's scheduled to go up Monday. It may go up later. I don't think I got ahead because, like I said, when the baby came, I'm behind now. I want to stay 5 articles ahead for Monday through Friday. Like, by now, I should have already have Monday through Friday's articles done, but I don't. So I'm going to try to get them done this weekend when I can find the time. And Heroes of the Storm.
Heroes of the Storm. Okay.
Mike, what do you want to tell us about Heroes of the Storm today? You're going to be our residential Heroes of the Storm newscaster.
Well, last week we just basically touched on who was in the game, and just I made little statements about the game play itself. This week, I wanted to just talk about maybe some of the characters that came up on the free rotation this week that I got to try out, particularly two that you seemed interested in. We'll get into that. I've been trying my hardest to gain the in-game currency so I can unlock a bunch of characters, because I want to make a video for the website to go with a little write-up about Heroes of the Storm. That's still a work in progress, but this week, the Elite Torn Chieftain and Tychus came up as characters on the free rotation.
Okay.
You seemed to express interest in those two characters.
I did.
So let's go into them. First, I'll start off with the Elite Torn Chieftain. I had a daily quest this week that had me have to play as one of the tank characters. So I was kind of forced into playing two games with him, and they ended up being really enjoyable. I think he's probably my favorite tank character so far, even though I haven't played with Arthas or Stitches yet.
So what kind of skills does he do?
He's not a high damage tank. I think the other tanks maybe do more damage than him, but he is extremely good at stunning enemies, and he's good at control. He has an ability where he charges forward a distance, and that charge will stun anybody it hits. And you can follow that up with an AoE ability that knocks things away from him. And you can use this to charge past somebody and knock them back towards your buddies. And they'll be stunned right up in the middle of your group of guys. So he's really good for that. He has an ultimate. It's the best stun in the game. However, you can't do damage while you're doing it. You, like, whip out your axe and rock out on your guitar, and it causes everybody in within the radius to just be stunned for 4 seconds. If all your teammates are there with you, they can obliterate the other team. I mean, that's 4 seconds of getting welled on. You can't heal. You can't run. You're just getting blasted. And that seems to be his focus. He's tanky. He has a lot of health. Not doing extreme amounts of damage, but he has a lot of control mechanics. To me, he's the most fun tank, because the other tanks, they seem like they either have a lot of health and do no damage, or they do a lot of damage, but they're not that tanky. Like, Tyrael, it's not that tanky to me. He dies really easy. I may be playing him wrong, but he seems to die really easy. I played a game with Elite Torn Chieftain, a good back-and-forth game, no big level gap between the teams, and only died once the whole match.
You said level gap. Are level gaps an issue right now?
Well, they did make a recent change to... They had a system in place that kind of... If one team got ahead of the other team, they trickled XP to the team that was behind to try and keep their level closer. They changed that to a system that they call the underdog system now. A lot of people don't like it. The way the underdog system works is if you get behind in levels of the other team, you start getting more XP for player kills. Problem is, if the other team gets ahead of you for level 10, it's a lot harder for you to kill the other teammate. You have to literally catch a 2-on-1 scenario. So you're not really getting a benefit from that underdog system. And once the other team, if the other team hits level 10 before you and gets their ultimates first, that can screw you over for the rest of the game. It's not that great of a system. But two evenly matched teams, you're not going to get that big deficit. If both teams are about the same skill strategic level as far as going to objectives and working together, then you're not going to get a big gap. And that game was not a big gap. We stayed within one level of each other the whole time and only died once. He has a healing ability. He can kind of be spec to be a very light healer, because he has a healing spell for himself, and you can spec it so that when he heals himself, he heals everybody around him. It's not a large heal, but any healing helps in this game. But I don't know. I just like the fact that he can survive, and he does really good control. People tend to shy away from you because they know that you can stun them, and they know that you can knock them into a hazardous area. You can knock them into towers and get them killed by towers. It's really nice. The other character that you seemed interested in was Tychus Finley.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't play as many games with Tychus, however. He's fun to play. I think his damage could use a little buff, his basic damage.
Oh, he doesn't do much damage?
Well, he does, but the thing with Tychus is he winds his minigun up and he starts firing. And each shot is not that much damage, but he's hitting way faster than anybody else.
Right.
So you got to kind of take that into consideration. I'm looking at numbers that look like it's low. I've got to play with him more to kind of see how it is as far as affecting their whole health pool.
Right.
I did get kind of a something I didn't know about him once I started playing. I thought that he could move while attacking all the time. That's actually an ability. He winds up his minigun, he's attacking, he's standing still. You pop that ability, though, and he starts attacking really fast, and you can move around while he's attacking. And it's nice. Seems to do pretty good damage. My favorite thing of his is he has a grenade throw. And that grenade knocks enemies away from the blast. So that's another thing. You can skillfully aim that grenade to knock enemies towards you. If somebody's running from you, you can throw it right in front of them, knock them back towards you. That allows you to keep damage on them.
Nice.
And it also has a talent that allows it to add, like, a bleed damage over time. It bleeds them for an extra 390 damage, which is, that's more damage than the grenade does itself. So it's interesting. I killed a group of heroes with that. Caught them in a group, piled up. They were kind of, they were low on health. They were below half health. Hit them all with the grenade, and then hit him with this kind of AoE attack as they were running away, and took out three
of
them.
Did you do the celebratory Donkey Kong dance after you did that?
Oh, yeah.
Man, I'd have done. I'd have jumped up. I'd have probably died while I celebrated, but to kill that many heroes at once, that sounds pretty good. I'm actually thankful that you came and put it on there. I'd like to try the game out. I'll just have to play it when you're slanging trash.
Well, hopefully we'll play some today. It's a quick download before the fight start. I don't know.
Oh, we'll play it soon.
I'm enjoying the crap out of it. The daily quests are fun because daily quests, they force you to play with characters that aren't maybe not necessarily your favorite character to get that gold. And I don't know, the game is just enjoyable. Even when you lose, I mean, there's been games where I was just super frustrated and my team wasn't working together and we just got the snot kicked out of us. But it's still fun. You still get better with your character regardless. You learn how to deal with having multiple people attack you, being the only person left alive. And to me, that makes you better at the game. And the game's just, it's just fun. It's a fun game. Can't wait till it's either more people I know is in the alpha or beta, once it gets to the beta stages, or it releases, and I can play with not even a full team of five people, but just two or three people. We can get on comms and talk and strategize. I think it's going to be an excellent game. It's going to be like Awesome Knots, when me and you played Awesome Knots, but better. I think it's better than Awesome Knots.
Okay. Mike, I was trying to get you into a discussion group on Facebook where we would talk politics with people, and we would argue with people about political beliefs and stuff like that. And today, I was sitting there, my little brand new sweetheart in my arm, and I was looking through my phone, and I pulled up that group page, and I was looking, and I hit unfollow group. I was the only person in there who didn't believe that Barack Obama's a Muslim, that he's part of the New World Order. What else? What else crazy shit did they come up with? All those rumors, all those things they put on Facebook, just smack talking the president, they pretty much believe that's 100%, and it's all from like reliable sources such as redstate.com or whatever it's called, the Tea Party News Network, that's reliable, and just any other kind of extremely conservative right-wing blog, and they believe anything. And like I said, I kind of hope Hillary does win president, because I may monetize that situation, because I can make a conservative blog today perpetuate all of the lies that people have spread about this president. And he's not a great president, don't get me wrong. I could perpetuate all the lies that they spread about him, and I could make money doing it. And what was really crazy is there was one website that I'm not even going to talk about because I don't need to give them any more traffic. They talked about the Benghazi incident. You've probably heard about that.
Yeah.
And that's all they talked about. Well, I went to Reddit, and I put a little question on their political discussion board. And one of the people there at Reddit, they told me that they did a little thing, whatever they do. You know, there's people that are a lot more tech-savvy than me when it comes to the internet. And they did a little thing on that website. They had 3,800 pages to do with the Benghazi incident. And he said that all that web page is there for is to generate hits for them to make money. They're making money on a tragedy. And that's what I'm looking at with the Benghazi incident. Things like that. And Sandy Hook is the same thing. Remember the Sandy Hook shooting? Anytime. Oh, yeah. It's like these crazy-ass political partisans, they just jump on any incident and they just try to make money off of it. I don't think they give a shit about anybody.
They don't. And I'm glad you unfollowed that. I would imagine, the reason why I never joined it, because I would imagine that that had the type of people that I saw just on a random post. I don't even remember what the Facebook post was, but the first comment on the list of it was some guy who was ex-military, and he was talking about having served, but he made the comment about talking to our boys in Iraq and seeing how they feel about Obama being the reason they're there. And I stepped back, and I was like, man, pretty sure Obama's not the one who took us to Iraq.
Nope.
Pretty sure that happened under the previous president.
But I'll tell you right
and
now.
Those people, my issue with those people is if they find somebody they don't like,
yep,
anything is their fault. Even if you have undeniable proof that this stuff happened before they were in office. We went to Iraq under Bush, but this guy, straight up, and in multiple comments following the first one, blames Obama for being in Iraq, and that our soldiers are there and are dying in Iraq. Doesn't make any sense to me. I almost had, my brain hurt after reading that, and that's why I don't think I could be part
of that
community.
Obama said he'd take them out, and where are we? We're still there. And I know he's got Congress that is just obstructing everything. They're just standing in front of him every which way.
Well, that's the other issue is they think that he just has the push the button power to just pull everybody out. They don't realize that the Conservative Party they have the House now.
Yeah,
the Conservative Party has the House. You don't see the House pushing to get them out of Iraq.
Do not. Another big thing that happened politically was the Supreme Court. They pulled out the Bible and said, hey, we're going to let Hobby Lobby not give certain types of birth control to women. And there's two arguments here. One is, by them doing that, they've opened the gate to allowing businesses to discriminate based on religious beliefs and make decisions on their health care. And some good examples, or at least I think good examples, were what if you worked for a company owned by a Muslim and they said, no, we're not going to pay for this product that's made for pork, because there's things that are made for pork byproducts in medical. Or what if you had a religion who said you couldn't do a certain thing a certain way? And it kind of brought that up, but then another argument.
Well, I think, well, let's,
for
it let's
was
address just, that one right quick. I think the issue there is that you wouldn't have that issue. I don't think you're going to see the Supreme Court pull out the Quran.
You probably won't.
Look, my views is that you should not be able to take your religious beliefs outside of your home into your business and affect other people's lives.
But it does set a precedent. You have to say that, because Hobby Lobby will not give women, I think it was, I don't know all four of them, but I think IUDs fell in one, morning after pills, and there's two other ones, I'm not sure, but... And that's based on purely religious things. The Supreme Court, no, they may not pull out. They may not have even pulled out the Bible. All they said was that we can't force a company to pay for things based on their religious beliefs or something like that. And who's to say that a person can't just say, oh, we're not doing that because that's against our religion?
Exactly.
And there's actually, like, Christian scientists. They don't believe in any kind of medicine. So what if you got a Christian boss who says, we're not paying for any medicine, so you're screwed. Scientologists.
Oh, yeah.
They're against any kind of psychiatric medication. So I'm a Scientologist. I'm not paying for your child's ADD medicine.
Yeah.
I'm not paying for all that.
The bottom line is...
But it's a precedent. They can present that. You know, a Scientologist company is going to have a lot of support from that money pit. They can present that same argument to the Supreme Court. Their little lawyers can say, we're citing this decision that the Supreme Court made, blah, 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 and we want our equal rights. And now the Supreme Court has tied its hands. It's got to consent to that.
Exactly. The big issue here is does Hobby Lobby provide insurance to its employees 100%? Do they pay for all of it? If the employee pays their part, or if the employee plays for more than half, Hobby Lobby themselves should not be able to.
No, they should.
To tell these people, to tell the insurance company. Hobby Lobby doesn't own the insurance company. The insurance company is a third party. Right. They should not be able to put a stipulation on this third party insurance company that the employee is paying for that insurance. Even if Hobby Lobby's paying a portion of it. I used to work for a company, they paid 70% of the total cost of my insurance, and I paid 30%. My 30% should allow me to say, you can't, under a religious or any, there's no reason why they should be able to deny me coverage over a certain thing, unless the insurance company itself doesn't pay for that.
Right.
The insurance company says those types of procedures are just way too expensive, like, say, getting a gastric bypass. Some insurance companies don't cover that unless it's a complete health need.
Right.
If you're in a bad position, you're extremely obese, and it's like doctors are saying you really need to have this, then they'll pay for it. That I understand. But to say, oh, we're not going to allow women to have this, this, and this type of birth control because of our religious beliefs, that's insane. Because I know Hobby Lobby's not paying. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say I know. But I'm pretty sure Hobby Lobby's not 100%
paying. I'm pretty sure they're not paying
100% for their insurance.
And what gets me is this has been on the burner for a while. This has finally come up to the Supreme Court, and it's finally getting a lot of attention. George Takei took it head on Facebook. He's leading a probably won't do well because, let me tell you, not a woman. Not religious, don't care. If I want to go buy me some Mod Podge to make me a decorated plate or something, I'm going to go buy some. I'm going to go to Hobby Lobby to do it. I just don't boycott, man. I guess that's what's wrong with America is people like me, they don't speak their... They don't exercise their opinions. They just speak it.
It's true, but this is another... To me, this is another statement for having socialized healthcare.
I believe... There's two things. The system we have right now doesn't work. The highest healthcare in the world, 37th ranked in the world. So there's countries with better mortality rates. But I think it's higher mortality rates is bad. Lower mortality rates is good. I sound completely stupid.
We rank like 37th in how good our healthcare system is.
And,
let's just put it that way.
And that's based on the United Nations World Health Organization study. And when I presented that document, hundreds of pages of data, to this discussion group that I was in, they said, oh, it's part of the UN. It's part of the New World Order. It's all lies, which the UN has been found to compress certain information to get across an agenda. But, man, these people think the UN, they're going to come in and disarm us. They're going to send UN troops to come take our guns.
Look, the kind of people you're dealing with on that site...
They're not rational.
They're not rational. Anything that you say that's against their position, they are going to turn it around to say, oh, that's just somebody who's against our values. It's against the American way, which they think they have claimed as the American way is their way. And that's not true.
And every day, Alex Jones is linked as some kind of a valid argument. Sorry, Alex Jones is as far away from sane and valid as you can get. Yeah, he may be right on some things, but he is no.
He's a bit of a wackadoo. He's fun to listen to.
Yeah, he is fun.
But you can't take everybody seriously. And the people that are on this discussion board, it's their way or no way, and they're going to turn any fact that you link. They're either going to discredit it with no proof. And nothing to back up what they're saying.
And anytime you ask for a citation with these people, they give you a link to a blog, Billy Bob's conservative U.S. Patriot Eagle Tears blog.
And his blog has no links to any sources.
Nope, his blog has absolutely no links.
They link you to opinions.
Yep, they'll link you to opinions. If they do cite anything. Whereas now, if I got most informed liberal web pages like Snopes that... liberal cesspool of Snopes.com, where all the George Soros fans can find it. I guess if I got to be liberal to have citations, then I guess I'm a bleeding heart liberal. Because I don't believe just anything anybody tells me. Barack Obama appointed six guys to his cabinet. They're the six czars that are direct links to the Muslim Brotherhood. You know where they got this information from? Out of a magazine printed in Egypt. Egypt isn't necessarily a bastion of freedom of speech. You know, it's not necessary. And then, on top of that, reading that article, that magazine, no sources. No sources cited at all. No source mentioned. And they believe that. They believe it because they hate Barack Obama could cure cancer tomorrow.
They believe it because it lines up with their view.
Barack Obama could cure cancer tomorrow, and this group I'm in a discussion with, they would find 37 webpages that would say, the evil communists think we're going to take their evil commie juice and stuff like that. They're going to come up with something to make him look bad.
There'll be something wrong with the cure, or he's not the one who really found it. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll say George Bush did it. And then, my favorite thing right now is this worship of Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
They worship Ronald Reagan. Don't even get me started. And they don't realize, they're like, he's like the super conservative. Ronald Reagan was pretty damn liberal. He spent more than any president at the time.
Exactly. That was the biggest one that blew my mind.
They're like, he cut taxes. Yeah, he cut taxes. Then he raised taxes back up to where it nullified his tax cuts. I'm like, you just believe that. You keep believing that about Ronald Reagan. We don't have great presidents anymore. We have puppets that follow the House and our Congress.
I heard conservative people on TV talking about how Reagan had a balanced budget, left office without being in a deficit, all kinds of things that weren't true. And I'm like, the only president I remember who really balanced the budget and really got us to a surplus was Bill Clinton.
Yeah. And they said that the rate Obama's going, he might have us with a little bit of a surplus. But the problem is, our biggest problem right now, and Clinton didn't fix this, and I guess if he could have, he would have. Our debt is still climbing, and it's outrageously high. Our national debt. I look at our national debt, and I'm like, there's no way. There's no way we can pay that off.
Well, and our military spending is out of control. It doesn't make any sense. And these extremists, the kind of people you're dealing with on that discussion board, they believe that you can fix this problem by chipping away at all the little things on the pie chart of what we spend money on. They're like, oh, well, we got to get rid of these socialized programs that help women, and we got to get rid of these socialized programs that help the poor people. That on a pie chart
but
is minuscule.
We got to spend more money on prisons, which we spend more money on prisons than anything, even war.
We have the highest incarceration rate in the world.
We got to keep throwing people in prison for stupid reasons. We're trying to privatize education because we need to take that public money and put it in prisons and blowing up people. Here's my problem with our war. We are a warring nation. We're a Christian. Now, I'm not going to say we're a certain religious nation, but ultimately there's more Christians here, so you got to say we're a Christian nation. We're a nation of people ruled by Christians who do not follow the basic tenets of their leader, Jesus Christ, who is a forgiving and loving person. Why the shit are we still blowing up people?
Well, I wouldn't say we're a Christian nation. I don't like even hearing that term. We're a nation that's under a lot of Christian influence.
Well, the thing is 9/11 happened. Okay. They killed right around 4,000 people. I think it was a little over 3,000. I don't know the exact numbers. You can tell we've researched all this. So we go over there and we blow up large portions of the Middle East. We've killed over 100,000 people there. I mean, when is our lust for vengeance satiated? All we're doing now is creating more enemies.
Well, and the big thing there is how many of those 100,000 people, or whatever the number is, were innocent bystanders?
Yeah, a lot of them. Most of them. Most of them are. Very few of them were actually terrorists.
Yeah. The thing is going to war, going into other countries, blowing things up, that is a money-making scenario.
Yeah.
And that's why we're there.
Halliburton to rebuild it.
Exactly. That's why we go, we blow up a country, and then we rebuild a country.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it when we were in high school? Was it Kuwait? Was that the one?
Yeah, it was Kuwait and Iraq.
God, I remember when we were kids, we were talking about going to work over there to make buku money because at that time, they were rebuilding this place that we had just destroyed.
Yeah.
And you could go over there, jump in construction, and make a ton of money. It's a big money-making operation. On top of the underlying oil issue, just the business side of it, of them going in, rebuilding stuff, and then putting in a McDonald's.
But what gets me is we've killed all these terrorists. People are actually on the internet bragging about we've killed more terrorists than any other nation. But here's the thing. If you blow up a village, kill five terrorists, and there's 500 people there, and you kill 100 people by shooting a missile at it, guess what? If you killed, and if you were targeting two guys and you killed 100 people, there's 500 people. But there's 398 people there that are probably going to become terrorists because you just shat in their backyard.
Yeah, you mean you just killed their wife, their child,
their friends, their drinking buddies, whatever.
And we've had this conversation before. What SEAL Team 6 did with Osama bin Laden? Why don't we have? Why aren't our operations focused on stuff like that? Why aren't we sniping people from long range and getting the hell out of there? Why are we going in, blowing up villages, spending way more money? It's a lot cheaper to put a few men on the ground, to be covert, to go in and take out your targets.
And taking more Obama is taking more use of drones. So we have those.
But even then, with drones, you're doing that thing where, oh, they're in this village, or they're in this building. And then blow the building up. Well, who else is in that building?
Well, I think they got drones now that are a little bit more precise. But then, you know, seeing the video of the guy who blew the building up and killed these people's babies, the dude said on the video, well, they shouldn't have had their kids there. I'm like, really? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite article that they brought up.
Well, it seems that, and not everybody, I don't want to make a broad sweeping term of all Christian people, but it seems that the ones who are being loud about this is they have great Christian value of life when it comes to our people, our soldiers, but they, what about human about beings?
For example, on this site that I was a part of, and that I'm no longer a part of, because they're all crazy, they had a video of Barack Obama making a joke about one of the White House's head pastry chefs leaving the White House. He's married to it. He's got a husband, of course. They're going to blow up over that because they're very anti-gay. And he made a joke about how his pies are like crack. And they blew up. They said, oh, Obama makes a crack joke. They said, Obama makes a crack joke. What, is that presidential? That's not appropriate. The very next post they made was a video of these soldiers recording, Middle Eastern people that they were monitoring having sex with a goat. They made fun of that. And I'm like, okay, so the president can't make a basic joke about the pies being so good they're like crack. But our soldiers, which you're supposed to be supporting and which you're supposed to have high expectations of, they could post a video on the internet of people fucking animals and getting away with it. And you just laugh at that. Ha ha, that's funny. There's nothing wrong with that. And then the head guy of that discussion group, he posted a video of these Latino kids twerking and grinding each other, acting like whores and stuff in Walmart. And he said, these illegal immigrants, he just showed his true colors. He is a flag or cross-burning racist. That's just all there is to it. The dude is racist as all get up. And I'm not one to pull the racist card that much, but that guy, I just quit. I'm done with that.
Yeah, it's probably better for your neural pathways to not deal with people like that all the time. John is terrified of spiders. He's always squealed like a little girl. That was a very small spider.
Mike, we got fish to cook. And this podcast, it's going to be a little shorter because we went a little longer last time. Is there anything you want to say?
Well, I did one more thing about the politics. You said something about Hillary Clinton earlier. And on one of the recent Joe Rogan podcasts, he mentioned her making a big boo-boo statement. She said something about right after Clinton got out of the White House that they went through a period where they were broke, dead broke. And Joe's talking about how that comment's probably going to kill her in the next election. What do you think about a comment like that? Because they obviously were not broke in the sense that the average person like me or you say we're broke.
Book deals. Bill was getting hundreds of thousands of dollars to make speeches, and he wasn't making a couple of speeches a week. I think he was making almost daily speeches.
Yeah.
He probably, like most presidents, made some sweetheart deals with certain corporations to get money. I mean, she could tell us she's broke all damn day long. But if anybody brings it up, they're going to want to see her banking history and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, I think I meant more. What do you think a statement like that will do to her politically?
I don't think it's going to matter because Hillary Clinton's already buried herself. I mean, nobody's going to vote for her because a lot of women are still like, why the hell is she still with Bill Clinton? I mean, he got caught with Monica Lewinsky, but it's highly doubtful that she was the only one. I mean, I heard some interesting things about how much of a whore Bill Clinton is, and Monica Lewinsky probably wasn't the only one. Hillary Clinton has some audio right now where she was laughing about getting some rapist off, and they've made a big stink on that very reliable source of information, the Tea Party News Network. She's got a lot of damning audio files. They're gonna strangle her with Benghazi.
Yeah.
She's not gonna win any conservative votes. She's gonna take a lot of liberal votes. She's not gonna win any conservative votes. The Republicans can win if they take on Marco Rubio or some kind of Latino president, because the only way they're gonna get those liberal votes is to start swaying those immigrant votes. And a lot of your major Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot left and right now, because the more they come out anti-immigration or pro-immigration, they can't even take a stance on immigration. Because then you have Cantor and David Brett. Cantor made the comment that he would work with Barack Obama on immigration. David Brett, complete unknown professor from a university, said, look at this guy, he's going to support immigration and he's just amnesty. This is when you say amnesty, people shit themselves, because that's like 20 million new people right there.
Yeah.
And he won. Unknown Tea Party candidate won because of the Republican made. Yep. So you got to get, if the Republicans have any chance to win, they're going to have to put somebody in there that's going to win that immigrant vote. And that immigrant vote, that immigrant candidate is going to have more pro-immigration legislation, not amnesty.
Well, do you think that they'll sink themselves because of that? If they try to put in a pro-immigrant positioned candidate,
what's going to happen?
Will they sink themselves because of the Tea Party? Will the Tea Party rail against them and maybe they end up sinking themselves?
If the economy doesn't show any visible improvements, and it has to show some significant changes for even, you got to get Fox News to acknowledge that the economy's improving. And for them to acknowledge that it's improving, it has to improve so much that it cannot be denied, that Fox has to report on it. So
even when it made semi-significant improvements, Fox News claimed that it wasn't because of this administration's policies, it was the previous administration's policies.
They said, oh, it was going to happen anyway.
Exactly. I don't know that you'll ever get Fox News to say that.
I think the Republicans are going to sink themselves like they did last time. They are going to go at each other. The Tea Party and the basic Republican Party, which is so strange, they're going to kill each other before they get to the real fight.
Well, me and you have both agreed that we need more than a two-party system, and we're almost getting that now. We've got the Democratic Party, and then we got the Republican Party, and then we got the Tea Party, because they really, their views are so extreme and so out on the edge.
Right. Well, the Tea Party's separate. The Tea Party's goal is to take over the Republican Party. That's what the Tea Party's goal is.
But yeah, but isn't that going to force Republicans into either an independent or neutral?
No. Because what's going to happen is remember, most Republicans are conservatives. A lot of conservatives want to go more conservative. Tea Party candidates have no problem saying abortion is wrong, 100% pro-life. Whereas Republican candidates, being mainstream, they got to balance because they're worried about getting those liberal votes too. See, a Tea Party candidate thinks they're going to win just on a conservative base, and they can. This is how George Bush won. He motivated all those church voters to come vote for him. If the Tea Party could get the church to vote for him, then the Democrats are going to have a hell of a fight. But here's the deal. We're going to know later. When Bratt and the Democrat... No, I think it's another Republican. When Bratt has to run against the guy for Senate.
Oh, for the Tea Party?
And if Bratt don't win, if Bratt does not win that race... That's going to be a kick in the balls for the Tea Party. Because that's going to make...
Well, for the Republicans across the board.
It's Republican versus Tea Party, I believe. I might have that wrong. And you know what? I could do a quick look for it right now.
Well, while you do that, I'll talk about the other thing that I wanted to mention. When the election comes up, when the presidential election comes up, do you think that the Democrats are going to... have their own candidate? Or do you think this is going to be a scenario where the vice president...
Dude, don't you pay attention to what they say on Facebook? Barack Obama going to run for a third term!
Okay, but we're talking about the realm of reality. We're talking about the wrong realm of reality. Do you think that the vice president is going to run? Or do you think they're going to go try to pull in a new candidate? Vice president doesn't have a...
They're going to have a primary.
A great reputation.
They're going to have a primary. Hillary's going to beat Biden, but... I think the Democrat Party is going to end up finding another candidate.
What do you think about, and I don't think that this person would ever try to, or not anytime soon, but what do you think of somebody like Elizabeth Warren?
I don't know much about Elizabeth Warren. I know she tried to do the, what did she try to do? Remind me.
She was big on, she's a big economics person. But she tried to do a lot of investigation into what happened with the bailout money, where that money went.
Right, okay.
She was trying to get some accountability into how that went down.
I think she would do well, but the thing is nobody, no woman, is going to beat Hillary Clinton. Because don't you know that Bill Clinton murdered somebody to become president?
Well,
that's fact. That's Tea Party news fact.
Well, let's talk about reality. Look,
I just don't see her outdoing Hillary Clinton.
In the past, I was, if there was going to be a woman president, I thought Hillary would be the best one, the best foot forward in the past. But
well, she's so popular.
Well, that and look, she has Bill Clinton's a very knowledgeable person.
Yeah,
and now it would be the two of them, two minds. Together on that, and right. I think that would be good. But Elizabeth Warren is a very intelligent woman. I was glad that she won. I can't remember if she won senator.
She brought something up here a while back, and the conservatives kind of ripped her apart on it. But I can't remember. There were some things I was reading about Elizabeth Warren that it might be too soon for her. But I think the Democrats have it in the bag because the Tea Party. They're going to shred the Republican Party. The Tea Party is going to shut out the Republican Party.
Yeah, and I think one thing that people forget is they do have to get the independent voters, the people who don't necessarily side one way or the other. And I think as long as the Tea Party values are being so blatantly out in the open and they're the loudest part of the Republican Party right now, I think that's going to turn off the independent voters.
I'll probably go third party again. I'll probably go third party candidate again. I don't know if I'll vote for Rand Paul because he's a little scary with the religious stuff sometimes. He does bring that up into some of his conversations at times. I just wish I could find a nice non-religious.
Well, that's like him and Ron Paul both. They would bring up stuff like that, and yeah, I have my concerns. I have my concerns with somebody who doesn't want to keep their religious views out of their political statements
right. And
out of how to govern. But at the end of the day, if Ron Paul could win in the past, that's who I wanted to win. He has enough views that make sense for me to deal with his religious views.
I think... What's bad for the Democrats is right now is the Republicans have a large pool of prolific nominees for their president. The only way that they can bring any harm to themselves is primaries. The people, the Republicans, you know, selecting their candidate. There are some decent Yeah, I'd say decent. They're going to be the same president. They're still going to be the same president.
Well, yeah.
And, but let's say, I can't think of a major Tea Party candidate. Let's say Ted Cruz gets the nomination. Ted Cruz is the Tea Party guy.
Yeah.
He's out of his damn mind. He's a very smart guy. He's extremely intelligent. But his beliefs are... Anyway, his beliefs are just out of way. But anyway, let's say he gets it. He might could win, and he would be the closest thing to a Tea Party president that they'll get. But now, let's take a guy like Marco Rubio, who's been awful quiet. He would might have a better chance because he could probably sway a lot of the immigration vote. If you can sway the immigrant vote and you're Hispanic, you're probably going to be pretty good at it. As far as the Democrats go, man, I don't know any other Democratic candidates except Hillary Clinton, and I don't think Joe Biden's got it in him. I don't think Joe Biden can do it.
Well, that's why I brought it up. I don't think that he... If they tried to push him, I don't think that would be the wisest decision for the Democratic Party.
I think Joe Biden has a little bit too much history. Too many... crap. He's got too much controversial history going on.
Yeah.
I can't really pick any out that I can talk of. I think he has a drinking problem that everybody likes to make fun of, and nobody's going to vote for a drunk.
Well, do you think that comedians will benefit from the Republican primaries as much as they did with the last election's Republican primaries? Because they had material that if they didn't want to get out of the past, they could still be going on it today.
Comedians still do pretty good by making fun of the current administration just because of the shenanigans that happened. Up in D.C., but they don't really... A lot of comedians don't mess with politics because politics is often off topic.
I guess I was more saying, even just for my purposes, the Republican primaries last year, it was just... It cracked me up to watch.
Well, that's what they did. I think, just like last election, they're going to do the same thing. They're going to do the same thing. They are going to riddle themselves with so many holes... By the time they do get to the presidential elections, Barack Obama didn't even have to try to beat Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney beat himself.
Yeah.
And the Republican candidates that he ran against beat him. And you know what? That's the advantage of being an incumbent president. And when Barack Obama ran up against Hillary in the primaries, guess what? The reason why he had so much trouble, which I won't say he had so much trouble out debating Bush... But the reason why he struggled was because the Democrats that were doing all the debating riddled themselves full of bullet holes.
Yeah.
If Joe Biden isn't selected as the candidate, then we're both parties. They're not going to have any bullets to fire at each other when it gets to that last 3 months before we vote for president. So I think it might be the most honest election we have. But at the point, I'm starting to wonder if... You know, you say our votes don't really count because of the electoral system. I'm starting to wonder if our votes don't really count because of the companies that do the electronic voting that allow for tampering and stuff like that.
Well, that's definitely a concern. I just have, you know, I had my issues with the Electoral College.
Yeah.
If you live in a state that is not known as a swing state, you live in a state that is a, let's say, red state. And it's always a red state.
Yes.
It is dominated red state. If you decide to vote for an independent third-party candidate or for a Democrat, your vote is stifled in the grand election because you're not going to sway your state with your one vote.
Which these weaker candidates this election cycle may lead to a bigger third-party presence.
I hope so. I was talking about the Republican primaries, and the one... shining voice, or there was two actually, one in the beginning and then the second one later on, but your big voice, well, they were both there in the beginning. You had Ron Paul and you had Gary Johnson, both. And they showed up at a primary and it was televised and you watched it. You had two people making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And you could tell the difference when they spoke and when the other candidates spoke. The other candidates, it was like you was watching... A TV show that wasn't real.
Right.
And all they're doing is playing to the people in the room.
They don't even answer the questions. They just say what they want to say in response to the question.
When they asked, well, that's one big problem. The other problem is when they asked Ron Paul a question, and he answered seriously, not to the room. He wasn't trying to please the people who were in the audience. And
the
audience booed him.
The debate.
The audience booed him for that. He was asked about drugs, and he was like, we should legalize all drugs and let people choose what they want to do. The audience booed him for that.
Of course they do.
No other candidate, regardless of their view on that panel that day, would have said that. They were playing to the crowd. And in that playing to the crowd, they made asses out of themselves.
Mike, I think we're going to wrap it up. I want to know. Here, a while back, there was a debate between Bill Nye the Science Guy, one of those creationist guys. Have you watched it?
Yes, I have.
I think we should talk about that for a minute on the next podcast.
Yeah, we can do that. You think you'll have time to watch it between now and then?
I watched like the last half of it.
I would. You should watch the opening statements of the two. You should probably watch the first half of it. If you can sit through the first half of it, that'll give you a good idea about what happened. You need to hear those opening statements.
I'm gonna listen to it the best I can, and I'm gonna speak on behalf of the creationist guy. And then you'll have a little debate. We'll bring up some things.
That's fine. You need to hear the opening statements so you can see what the creationist guy was doing and what Bill Nye was trying to do.
Yeah.
The creationist guy, is all he's doing is repeating himself.
Right. Well, let's just save it for next week. Well, look, this is John.
And this is Mike.
And I want you guys to... Well, I hope you've enjoyed your 4th of July weekend. And
really, just fish.
Yeah, just chill.